Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I am your host, Austin Peterson. Today is Monday, November the 12th. Welcome back. And my first thing I need to start off here was an apology because I owe you guys some podcasts. If you don't follow me regularly and you just follow my podcast, you probably haven't heard that I have been unfortunately very, very ill. You might be able to hear it in my voice. But also I had a really exciting event last week that I had to attend to with the end of the elections. Midterms are finally over, yes, and some of you know I actually was able to produce an election night television show in a brand new studio that was built out in Columbia, Missouri for a friend of mine, Jennifer Bukowski. So I was tied up with that, and I was tied up with a severe illness. So I'm actually just going to take my time today, go nice and slow through today's podcast, even though we're discussing something really intense, a couple of really intense things. The first story that I wanted to share with you today is conspiracy story. It's really interesting stuff, and I have to start off this podcast by offering a caveat and say that the story that I found is only corroborated in British journalism, right? And that's a problem because I'm only seeing certain sources reporting it. One is The Sun. Two is The Mirror, three is The Metro, and four is The Daily Mail. And these are all four of these are British newspapers known for sometimes having tabloid elements to them. So I will just say that just take this story with a grain of salt. But it's an interesting story, and I want to talk about it. And it's Monday morning, and we can talk about whatever we want as you guys head to your morning commutes. But I saw this story in the Daily Mail, and again, I went out and searched to try to find like a mainstream source that was reporting on this. Well, the Daily Mail is as mainstream as it's going to get for this. And sometimes their reporting is not perfect, but it's too interesting not to talk about. So today we're talking conspiracy theories, and let me just say that this story for now is unconfirmed. Headline, secret plot by 200 elite neo-Nazi soldiers within German SAS to slaughter politicians and immigrants in mission known as Day X is smashed after former major confesses all. The subtitles for this are that elite soldiers basically plan to kill the Green Party of Germany's Claudia Roth and other left-wingers. They wanted to execute their plot when law and order broke down in Germany, and they believed that that this was imminent and death squads were formed for assassinations. So why you should be skeptical about this is not just because it's reported by the Daily Mail. Consider the source, but also consider the method of reporting. They're saying that a former major in the German military confesses it. Well, you know, that's going to lend it a little bit of weight for some people, but really a major is not really the highest rank that you can get in the military. There's several ranks above major. And so it's quite possible that this person could be a disgruntled veteran. This could be somebody perhaps who suffered from PTSD and misremembers or has fantasies. When one person is the source for a story, you have to dial it back. Like, it's like sometimes you'll get, like, I saw once that the Minister of Defense from Canada once came out and said that he saw UFOs or that the government was hiding the UFOs. And he was the Minister of Defense for an entire country, first world country, Canada. And everybody was reporting on it and talking about it because when somebody that big says it, it means it's, you know, it could theoretically be true. I mean, and that's basically like if Secretary of Defense James Mattis said that we're hiding UFO, people are going to freak out about something like that. But just because one person reports it, you might want to take it with a grain of salt. But this story is so nuts, I just had to share it with you guys. Listen to this. 200 elite soldiers who formed a covert neo-Nazi fashion faction within Germany's equivalent of the SAS planned to butcher immigrants to the country. Oh God, that is such a loaded headline. They conspired to unleash chaos on what they codenamed Day X when they planned to kill Green Party leader Claudia Roth, Foreign Minister Heiko Maas, and ex-president Joachim Gauck. But authorities smashed the breakaway group of the Bundeswehr's KSK unit before their death squads could carry out the assassinations. The 200 soldiers were also set to target leaders of asylum groups they blamed for rapes, terror, and social unrest. Oh, man. It's like, you know, the leader of that group is just like 1 minute away from saying something like, they're not sending, Yemen's not sending their best, they're rapists. just joke, guys, just jokes. Take it easy. This is probably a not a real story, so don't take anything too serious. If you're a, you know, a crazy, crazy Trumper and something like that offends you, you're not in the right place, man. You just patriotic correctness, political correctness. This is not the podcast for you. Anyways, a report on the thwarting of the neo-Nazis reads, numerous interrogations paint a picture of a conspiratorial force that is not supposed to shy away from the killing of political opponents. This is the story editorializing, by the way. The racists were going to unleash Day X when law and order collapsed. Just because you want to kill politicians, does that make you a racist? By the way, anyway, something that they regarded as imminent. They thought that the collapse of law and order was happening. They thought it was imminent. Police originally thought... Now, which police? There's no police named in the story. Police originally thought that the plot was just alcohol-fueled fantasy. But then interrogators got the truth out of a former Air Force major. The plotters all belonged to a group called UNITER, which was founded in 1996 to take care of soldiers who had toured in Afghanistan and Africa. UNITER has denied any knowledge of the group. German authorities have also been scouring training camps on the Austrian and Swiss border for weapons, ammunition, food, and petrol. And leave it to the Daily Mail that there's not one single linked source to this. And this came out on November the 10th, written by Sebastian Murphy Bates for Mail Online. There's 457 comments. But I mean, the problem is with stories like this is that, as interesting as it is to read, I mean, the bigger the headline, the more it should be corroborated, right? I mean, the headline says, secret plot by 200 neo-Nazis within the German SAS. Now, German SAS in the headline is in quotes, right? Which means not really the German SAS, but this other group, the Bundeswehr, right? And they said to slaughter politicians and immigrants in mission known as Day X is smashed after former major confesses all. And it's like something out of like a hardcore, like somebody in like, what's the Reddit forums, like the hard right subreddit, like this is like an alt-right fantasy novel is what it reads like. They want to kill Claudia Roth, the Green Party leader. They want to kill, they don't name Angela Merkel, but it says right here, it says, after Angela Merkel opened the borders, the group's ranks swelled, and they plan to kill ex-president Joachim Gauck. I mean, this is one of those stories that, like, you read, and, like, there's going to be a certain amount of people that are going to believe this, and, I mean, why would you go to print with a story like this that's not corroborated? You have one source, one single source, and then they go out and they say that German authorities have been scouring training camps. Police thought the plot was a fantasy until the interrogators got the truth out of an Air Force major. The plotters belong to a group called UNITER. UNITER's denying any knowledge of the group, and I can't find any official records out there that prove that this is true. I mean, if you're listening to the Freedom Report podcast and you want to look this story up and you find some actual evidence of it, please send it my way. But for now, I'm just going to have to throw this on the bullshit pile and say right-wing death squads, you know, sorry guys, but for those who are kind of like, the Green Party leader, you might want to actually check your facts on this one because it looks like another BS headline from the Daily Mail. Now, the next story that I want to move on to today for the podcast is something that really struck me. And for a lot of you who follow me pretty close, I shared this on my Facebook page yesterday because yesterday was Armistice Day, the celebration of the end of World War I. And it's interesting because, you know, I've really been listening to a lot of World War I history podcasts in the last year. I've been doing a lot of research about World War I, and I think part of it was fueled by my interest in this game called Battlefield 1. And Battlefield 1 is kind of an older game now. A game that was created by DICE, and it's basically a World War I shooting game. Very realistic, all the weapons, you know, from the time period, and it kind of got me reinterested in an old hobby that I had thought of taking up. You know, I'm kind of a gun collector, but I had never done military surplus before, not until a few years ago when I purchased my first Russian rifle, a Mosin Nagant that I picked up at the Russian battle rifle, at a gun show in Fairfax, Virginia. I can't remember, somewhere out in Virginia. My good buddy Joe Trotter, he's a big gun nut like myself, and we went out to this gun show, and they had just crates, boxes and boxes of these guns, these Russian rifles. And the gun that I bought was the Russian rifle, the Mosin Nagant, but it was a 1942. So it wasn't a World War I version, even though they did use them in World War I. It was first manufactured in the late 1800s. And then just recently, I picked up another rifle that was used in World War I era, the SMLE, or the Lee Enfield, or you can call it the short magazine Lee Enfield. The Lee Enfield is beautiful, very handsome rifle that I picked up, and I'm still working on quite a bit of it. If you follow my Facebook page, I've been doing a couple of live streams showing me working on the rifle and putting it together, because somebody sporterized it. Sporterizing just means that, you know, you turn it into a sport rifle and you take away all of its military provenance. And I have been trying to restore it to its military provenance. Thankfully, I have a friend out in Washington who, his friend works in a museum, and they have some of the wood, well, some very old wood, 100-year-old wood for this rifle. So he sent me some of these really key parts, and I've got a few more nuts and bolts and screws and things like that that I need to find to locate before I'll have my fully restored Lee Enfield rifle. And this was a rifle that was used in World War I. So I've been thinking about this conflict lately and some of the lessons that it has for us today. And it's interesting because, this war shaped so much of our modern world. And yet it is one of those, what we would consider a forgotten war. We have a lot of forgotten wars in the United States, and I mean, it's really hard not to forget some of them, simply because I think when we added it up, I think the United States since our founding has only ever been at peace combined for like 25 years. There have been very few times when the United States is not in conflict, and from 1914 to 1918, the United States joined World War I because of Woodrow Wilson, because of our desire to expand our power and our desire to protect what we saw as our interests overseas. The United States merchant shipping was under assault by German U-boats, and the United States got dragged into the war. Also, there was that whole thing with the Zimmerman telegram, where the Germans sent a letter or a telegram to the government of Mexico saying that they will give part of the United States to Mexico if Mexico will invade the United States. So there are some arguments for why the United States should have intervened in World War I, simply because that kind of a credible threat itself right there is enough. But there were a litany of other reasons why the United States got in World War I. We're not going to debate that. I just want to talk about the humanity of it for a moment, because I came across this story that I shared on Facebook. And it was a recording, an audio, that documents the moment that the First World War ended. Now, what's amazing about this video, when I say that it records, that this recording documents the moment the First World War ended, like literally, like the moment, you can hear the war ending. They were recording at the time of the armistice. And I'm going to play that for you so you can hear it, and I'm going to read some of the story so you can experience this moment and just really feel what it must have felt like there after four long years of war to finally be at an end. So let me play this audio for you, and then I'll read the story to you, because I just thought it was very thrilling. Especially, I live right next door to the World War I Museum. I think it's the only real World War I museum in the United States. And the Liberty Memorial, again, right next door to me, is a giant, beautiful memorial to the people who fought and died in World War I. Interesting juxtaposition. All these things coming together make me think that there's a reason why, and perhaps I need to, continue my study on this crucial point of American history and make it not such a forgotten war. A lot of lessons. So listen to this. This is a recording of the very first moment that World War War ended. World War One ended. So this is the minute before, and then you'll hear the minute after. Heading in November 11th, 1918, almost 11 a.m. 11 a.m. is when the armistice declared the war would be over. The guns are still firing. And now it's 11 a.m. Still a shot here or there. Listen. Did you hear that? Haunting. Chilling. Let me read this article to you. Today, this is from yesterday, but the article is written from the perspective of the Armistice Day. At the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, will mark exactly 100 years since the end of one of the greatest conflicts the world has ever seen. The First World War was a horrific war that saw the deaths of approximately 40 million military personnel and civilians. That included between 9 and 11 million soldiers. 40 million people, and not only 9 to 11 of them were soldiers. That's hard for us to imagine nowadays. However, the true reality of what it must have been like to be there when the war ended a century ago has now been brought into stark contrast by an audio recording released by the Imperial War Museum. Using a collection of recordings from their archive, they've gathered together an eerie collection of recordings from the American front that show the moments that the Great War actually ceased. Recorded near the River Moselle, which flows through Germany, France, and Luxembourg, the activity on the recording illustrates the sound of guns 1 minute before and then 1 minute after the armistice was declared. The amazing recording shows that until the moment the ceasefire was enacted, the guns kept firing. The brutality of the war then suddenly abated and was replaced by a chilling silence. 1 minute after the hour, the heavy artillery guns stopped firing. The war was over, and those who were left to remember it had escaped with their lives. At the end of the recording, the birds can be heard chirping once again, marking the end of the killing and the return of life to those blood-stained fields. It seems so short a duration of time, but the difference between 10:58 a.m. and 11 a.m. must have felt like a lifetime to those under the fire of the guns. Once 11 a.m. arrived, they could begin their lives again after spending years under the horrific conditions of trench warfare. The museum teamed up with sound designers Coda Dakota to create this important historical artifact, and visitors will be able to listen to it for themselves at a display at the museum in London. And whatever you do, guys, go to the Museum of London, because it's amazing. The exhibit was created using a process called sound ranging, which was used by military forces to work out where the enemy guns were by committing sounds to photographic paper. Will Worsley from Coda Dakota said, "This document from IWM's collections gives us great insight into how intense and chaotic the barrage of gunfire must have been for those fighting on the Western Front. We hope our audio interpretation of sound ranging techniques through bone conduction enables visitors to project themselves into that moment in history and gain an understanding of what the first ending of the First World War may have sounded like. If you find a second, have a listen and see what it must like to be after those men." Isn't that amazing? And then the birds at the very end, it's like, it's just so chilling. And it just goes to show that it's not actually silence that really represents peace, but it was the return of life that represents peace. When you hear the birds singing, it's to me, it just represents a return of life. But 40 million people. And what's interesting, you know, when we develop these weapons of war, when we develop, you know, machine guns and we develop bombs and we develop artillery and mortars and things like that, or we develop, you know, bombing planes and jets and things, you know, the reason why we develop these ostensibly is to save lives. The idea was before World War One is that we had these machine guns and we had all these new weapons that we would use, and in using them, we would actually save lives and we would have less civilians killed. But the reality is the opposite is what happened. by developing all these weapons of mass destruction, like chemical weapons that were used in World War I, we actually killed more civilians. We actually killed more soldiers, right? And so it is an interesting thing to think about. You think, oh, well, we're going to use this bomb or we're going to use this device and it's going to help save lives because, you know, and we're not going to kill as many civilians because of this or that or this. Well, of course, that's why chemical weapons are now illegal to use, because they don't, you can't use them to target, you know, soldiers. They can be used to target civilians. It's an interesting moral quandary to find yourself in. But I've been thinking a lot about World War One lately. If you're in Kansas City, if you're a friend of mine, hit me up. Let's go to the World War One Museum, because I actually haven't been yet, I have to confess. And I'm really looking forward to going, but I want to go with somebody who actually cares. I don't want to drag a friend who doesn't care about things like that. I want to take somebody who's really going to take it in and sort of experience it the way that I think it deserves to be experienced. Thank you so much for listening to my Freedom Report podcast. Sorry, my voice is sick. I should be up in fine fighting form by the next podcast, which will come out this Wednesday. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Freedom Report podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podbean, everywhere you can get it. And you all have a wonderful week.